All right, good evening. Hello and good evening. Good evening, you're all spread away. I'm gonna look all the way from Priel, all the way to Meital. And the boys at the end, the boys at the back, do you hear me? Very good, very good. Very good. Good evening, hello. Welcome to the fifth and last class of basic introduction to Halakha. At this point, you're all not at the basic level and you're not in the introduction level. We're all the way into what Halakha exactly is. Let's sum up what we've been through in the past five meetings. So at the first meeting, if you remember, we discussed about what is Halakha in general. Why do we have Halakha in the world? What happened after the Talmud has been edited? We finished with the Talmud. What happened afterwards? At the second class, we talked about three early important halachic writings. We started with the Rif. Then we moved to, we started with the Bahag Baal Halachot Gedolot, who was the first halachic book that was written post-Talmud era. Then we moved to talk about the Rif, Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi. And then we talked about the great Rambam, Maimonides. At the third class, we moved all the way forward until Rabbi Yosef Karo, Maran, who wrote down the Shulchan Aruch, which was based upon the tour, Arbat HaTurim, by Rabbi Yaakov Ben Asher. We talked about the differences between Sephardim and Ashkenazim. We talked about Rabbi Yosef Karo writing his book, and about Rabbi Moshe Iserlish, who wrote down the similar book, but just decided not to publish it because he was a mensch. And he said, I don't want to publish another book, halachic book, if there's going to be machlokot, disagreements in Israel. And he just said, I'm going to write it down as notes on the Shulchan Aruch. And last week, those of you who attended our Zoom class, we talked a little bit about how does halacha change. What is the rules, the fundamental rules that decide, that make us decide what halacha is? How do we decide between two halachot what the halacha is? We said that the most basic rule in decision of halacha is paying respect to the generations before us. The generations before us know better than us what the halacha is, and we always pay respect to that. We gave this probe, the mashal, that appears many places in halacha, although it's not a Jewish probe, not a Jewish story, about the fact that the generations before us are like giants, and we are like dwarfs. But the moment a dwarf that sits on the shoulders of a giant, he can see further. So we're like dwarfs compared to the giants before us, but we sit on their shoulders. And we can see further ahead, sharper ahead, and can decide things that are even changed a little bit from what was before us. We dived very much into this issue of different sections in Judaism. We talked about Orthodoxy, Conservative, Reform. There were a lot of questions. It was a very interesting class. And today, at the last class, I want to divide it into two. First of all, I want to continue from where we stopped last week and to talk about modern halacha, modern issues in halacha. There's so many modern issues in halacha. I will try to taste a little bit, to let you taste a little bit of what there is there. There's a huge iceberg, but we're going to just see a little bit of the ice. And at the end of the class, the second part of it would be my personal. I'm just going to share with you my personal thoughts and belief of why I think halacha is the most important thing that we have in our Jewish life. Why you think it's the most important thing we have in the Jewish life? Again, it's something that I personally have not done. There's not going to be sources about it or something. Just I'm going to share it with you. And I'm going to leave 5 minutes at the end for questions in general that you may have on halacha, on minhagim, custom traditions, conservative, reform, whatever you have, in Rabbi Yosef Karo, everything we talked about. That's going to be 5 minutes for questions at the end. So on that note, let's roll. The sources on the back where Iri is sitting right now. And today there's two sources. First one was this small letters that says the halachic process, and the other one that starts with right here, listening to music on personal electronic devices. Now, before we go to the music on electronic devices, please see this halachic process. Now, there is a book written by a great rabbi who is still among us and is one of the greatest scholars in Israel, called Rabbi Professor Daniel Sperber. I don't know if you heard of him, yes or not. He served as the head of the yeshiva, the Beit Midrash, in the Bar Ilan University in Ramat Gan, in Israel. He originally is American, and he wrote dozens of books. He even won the Israel Prize one day in Yom HaTzmaut on his work on halacha. He is a really, really, really centered halachic character in Israeli culture, and he is actually also one of the lefties in Orthodoxy in Israel. It's important to say it before I'm going to read what he said. He wrote a book, which we're not going to discuss now, about women and laying the Torah. He wrote a book, he's Orthodox. In his book, he gives a psak. I'm going to tell you the end. In his psak, he explains, an Orthodox psak, why he thinks today there is room to be heter for women to lay from the Torah. Again, in Orthodox shuls, if you heard about the concept of shuls, like such as Shira Hadasha in Jerusalem, or other, let's say, it's not egalitarian because that's the chita, but partnership minions, Orthodox partnership minions that are popping up in Israel everywhere. He is the rabbis of them, he's a rabbi of them. But I don't want to dive into this very interesting sugya and not tell you what I think, because there are some problems, I think, with his psak, but rather to read a little bit, to learn what he writes down in the introduction of this book, where the book of woman learning the Torah, because he reveals in this book, I think, in such simplicity, what we tried to talk about last week, and what exactly is the challenge in modern halacha decisions in our lifetimes. Because how do you decide what halacha is? So please see this, where it says the halachic process. We'll go ahead and read a little bit from it. We're going to start from the second paragraph. Listen what he writes carefully. In a recent conversation, a good friend of mine, a scholar and profound halachic thinker, remarked that the issue, when he talks about the issue is woman laning from the Torah, that the issue was not really one of aliyot for women or of women as Torah readers, or even of the place of women in the synagogue generally. Rather, the real issue was one of our understanding of the halachic process as a whole. Anyone with a basic Torah education, he continued, that his friend, could easily wend his way through the thicket of halachic sources, select a particular minority opinion or a particular case treated in the responsa, and weave them together to arrive at the desired halachic result. Now, this is a criticism that we can hear a lot, not only in Israel, but also here, about rabbis who say, we decide what the halacha is, this is our sources, this is our flow of halacha, go ahead, why not? And then they will say, you know what? Halacha is so wide, we just saw it in our series, halacha is so wide, so deep, so many opinions, so many rabbis, so many books, right? That's what we said to the Rambam. Maimonides decided, he said, I'm going to write down a book that everyone's going to agree with. But almost no one agreed with the Rambam about these books that he wrote down. Because, again, we're Jews, we disagree with each other. So he wrote down, he said that, and I have to say that personally, I agree with this. If you want to be makel, and that's a definition we're going to learn this year, there is a makel and there is a machmir. I said in Hebrew, because my Yiddish, my Ashkenazi accent doesn't sound very good. There is mekel and there is machmir. What is mekel? Mekel means that if I have an halachic dilemma, I will go with? Convenient. Lenient. What's the lenient choice? I'll give you an example. Let's see, what do you think? What is the mekel? And the machmir would be, wait, how do you say it in English? Strangers. Okay, let's give you an example. Let's say there is someone who doesn't. Let's go the example from last week with the conservative Judaism. Let's say someone lives far away from shul. He lives in a remote city. He lives far away from shul, and he really, really wants for his Jewish identity to drive to shul, so he wants to come to shul, so he can absorb a little bit for his identity and for his children, because there's no Jewish high school there, and they're already in high school, they're teenagers, you know, this is the critical ages for them. He wants them to come to shul in order to experience their Jewish identity and to enrich it. But he lives far away. He lives an hour and a half walking. They will not walk an hour and a half in a blizzard of snow like yesterday in Toronto. Now in minus 20 degrees, they will not walk it. Now he approaches the rabbi. Let's say an Orthodox rabbi. All right? Now the rabbi learns this sugya, learns this issue, opens all the way from the Torah, sees what the Torah says about Shabbos. Meshna, Talmud, Bar Halachot Gdolot, Rif, Rambam, Shulchan Aruch, Tur, Bet Yosef, Ramah, Derechei Moshe, all the way until he gets to his conclusions. And then he sees that, you know what? There might be a place to be heter, and heter would be approval, and halachic approval for him to drive on Shabbos. But on the other hand, if I do it, then what are the consequences of that? Maybe other people from my shul will say, you know what? If there's an heter for him to drive, maybe we can drive here as well. What's the difference between us? For him, he can't walk an hour and a half. I have problems with my legs, and it's difficult to me to walk 15 minutes, so maybe I would not walk this 15 minutes and drive. He saw there is a path of to be heter in that. But now he needs to decide. What do you think is the hekel part, the mekel, the lenient part, as he said, and what is the machmir part? What do you think? What is the mekel part and what is the machmir part? Ira, what do you think? Okay, Terry, afterwards. Yeah, I thought you raised your hand.
Oh, sorry.
No, yeah, you're right. No problem, Terry.
Just mekel, so if you want to be more lenient and say, look, for the greater good, better that a Jew should come to shul and identify and be part of the community, if it means he has to get in his car and drive, then mela, so he's going to drive. But he's coming to do something important and something that has value. Nobody's giving him a heter to go to the movies or to go to McDonald's.
You think that the rabbi would think, I think so, under inside his head, if I tell him you can only drive to shul, wait, but I need to fill my gas, wait, but I need to buy some milk, wait, I forgot to maybe my son wants to buy some shoes, there is a very big discount now in Yorkdale Mall, maybe I should go, it's Boxing Day, it's I'm just saying, it's
caught.
So what's the mekel, what's the machmir part?
The machmir is to say...
To say no?
You can.
That's the machmir part, according to you.
Sure.
All right.
That's
machmir.
Yeah. What I'm saying.
So that's machmir too, but that's what I'm saying. I think it's machmir only to him. But for the other part of the community, what about them? I think that, or for Judaism in general, I think that the perspective of machmir and mekel depends on who you're talking about. Because it's not an objective, I think so, and you can tell me what you think.
So when you're driving on the street, all the people who are driving in front of you that are slower than you are idiots. All the ones that are driving faster than you are maniacs. You are okay, but it's either maniacs and idiots. This is what it is. And if I am here and I am going to do this and this on Shabbat and I'm not going to do that, everybody on this side of me is a boy, and everybody on this side of me is some kind of black hat, the Rabbi. So
what you're saying really gets along with Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, who talked about him in our... A lot of pictures of rabbis. He was the chief rabbi of Israel. He was a huge Sephardic, giant halachic posek, originally from Egypt, then he moved to Israel. And he was the head of halacha in Egypt, all right, just to understand how big it is. And he said something that that was his Mishnah, his Torah in halacha. Kohach de hetera adif. The power of hater is always better. If you can find two ways in halacha, one is to be heter, to approve, and the other one is to be machmir, to say no, then you should go with the yes. The problem is, Terry, that not all the time, sometimes we confuse and we say when a rabbi says yes, then he's a mekel, and when the rabbi says no, then he's a machmir. But I'll tell you what my rabbi, Rabbi Bigman, usually says. He says that halacha is a blanket. The moment, you can never cover your entire body. The moment you're going to cover a little bit of your head, your leg's going to stay out. The moment you try to cover your legs, your head's going to stay out. There's never a way to cover your entire body inside the halacha that every part's going to be settled down peacefully. The moment you're being mekel on one side, you're being machmir on the other side. I'll give you another example. For relations to LGBTQ community, if we're going to say that LGBTQ can get married inside Judaism, for example, we're going to be very much what? Mekel, right? We're going to say, yeah, we're mekel, but we're going to be machmir on what on the other side? We're going to be machmir in maybe Ben Adam Nechaviro. We're going to be machmir in loving every person because he was born, created in the image of God. We're going to be machmir in other values. There is always this balancing between values that we need. Some of them are going to be machmir, some of them are going to be mekel. Yes, Gary?
But if the driving of the car to shul, you're mekel because you're going to be making, you're doing it for convenience yourself because you're justifying going to daven on Shabbos to Hashem. But machmir means you're stringent. You're actually observing the mitzvah of keeping Shabbos.
Exactly. So are you making a machmir in that case? What are you? You're. No, no. If you're gonna drive, he wants to drive on. He wants to get to shul. Yeah. That's the only way. Is he machmir now? Is the fact that he was? I want to do everything to come to shul. He's so firm. I want to come to shul every Shabbos. I want to come 7:15 a.m. every day in the week, weekly day for a Shabbos for a minyan in the morning and on Shabbos. I come both to Kabbalat Shabbat and to Shacharit and to Mincha.
But to be a yid and to keep all the mitzvah, you have. It's not easy. You have. It's difficult. Then you have to find somebody where you can stay with them for Shabbos to go shul. You can't find the easy way out.
So you agree with what this rabbi just told, we just read. You can find, you want a heter, you want an approval, you can find it all around the halacha. That's not a problem. You want a heter too, somebody you'll find it. I don't think that everything can find in heter, but most of the things would find a heter. You're saying it's more than that. It's not just playing with the sources and finding the... whatever the answer is. It's more than that. It's being a yid, right?
For example, a few years ago, I had to go during the second day of Pesach, or Rosh Hashanah. I can't remember which day. I think it was Pesach. I had to go to the hospital. I had to go. I was okay to go to shul, but I had a treatment to go to. So I had to phone. I phoned three rabbis. None of them could give me a heter for this day. So I had to phone a big rabbi here in Toronto. And this is what he said to me. I said, listen, I can't miss this. What do I do? How do I, can I get on the subway without putting money in it, and I can get there, and this, you know, what do we need? He says, let me ask you something. What do you do on Shabbos? I said, I'm Shomer Shabbat. I became Shomer Shabbat a few years ago. He said, well, then that's all that matters. Because you're going for something for your goof, okay? You keep Shabbat. That's the number one thing. And it stuck with me. So that's why I say, I think you have to, number one, you have to find a rav to talk to. Because there's so many, in our world today, there's so many opinions, you don't know which way to turn. But when do we that's okay for this, and then it's okay for this. You know what, I can eat in this restaurant because they don't have meat. Yeah, everything they say is kosher, but it's, you don't know, but they're open Shabbat, but that's okay.
So just to understand, just to jump on what you're saying, what is the priority value that you're saying in halacha decision? Even though you can find the heter, you can look at the books and you will find exactly the heter. You can go to the treatment and we will find you, and we're going to be machmir on your bryut. Going to be machmir on your health.
If it was that easy, everybody would be doing it.
Oh, thank you. So it's not that easy. Thank you for things that, because continue and see. Just said, it's not that easy. And that's a book that approves heter of women laning in Orthodox communities. All right, continue and see what he says. He says, this is one way, I'm reading at the middle of the second paragraph. This is one way of dealing with the halakhic questions. This, the deal that we said, the sources, you know, you first of all draw the target, and then you shoot the bullet, whatever you say in English.
Yeah.
All right. First of all, you know what you want to see? Just like, let's see, how do I play with the sources, and then I'll get to the... It happens. And there are rabbis who's doing it. Maybe that's legit. Maybe that's not. But let's see what he says. Another way, in his view, is to examine the sources in depth, and to flow with the current of the discussion within the sources until it brings you towards a result. In other words, to allow the halachic process to lead one rather than attempting to guide the halachic process along the predetermined course. Now, how do you do that? I mean, that's a book, that's a text. How does the text guide you? How does that guide you to towards something? I mean, we all know that when you read it, the way I know, the way you read a story, a novel, is not the way, and you, what do you understand for that? It's not the way what I read, because it's not that the book leading you, you're leading the book too, wherever your imagination goes to. Now, a halachic rule, and that's another thing that I want us to understand. In every halachic decision, one of the biggest things, percentage in the decision, would be the question of who is the rabbi? Who is the rabbi? Sometimes, more than what are the sources, it would be who are you asking? Because the person, and this is something that I disagree with this sentence, because the person that opens the source, even though it's not literature, even though it's not stories, it's an halachic text, but the way I might read or someone else might read this Shulchan Aruch, not always would be the same thing as someone else who reads the Shulchan Aruch. Now, a lot of people would be very angry at that because they say, no, it's objective. Halacha is objective. There is one way to read it, and that's all. Sometimes it's right. Sometimes there are things we say they are not legit. But in general, the way the rabbi approaches it, the way the rabbi knows what the situation is, what the dilemma, what is the complexity that the person that is asking the question is being at, and is not just answering it without even knowing the person, knowing the complexity, understanding his situation, a lot of times it differs on who is the rabbi and how he approaches the question. And he continues and he says, Eddie understood it, the second approach was the proper way to deal with halachic questions. But look what Rabbi Sperber says. Of course, and again, he's Meitir Leinin for Nashim. Of course, what he meant to tell me was that while there might be a halachic justification and historical precedent for women's receiving aliyot and reading from the Torah, the halachic current flows in the opposite direction, bringing us to an utterly different conclusion. That's in other words, if you really want to be mekel in Nashim and you just flow with the text, you're not going to be mekel, and that you're not going to be matir. The texts are very clear in that case. But he says, my response to him was, I totally agree with you that this is how one ought to relate to halacha. But to use the same image, I think that what we must do is to follow the river upstream to its source. If we follow the riverbed, we will find that it does not flow in uniform way. Because this is halacha. Sometimes it moves slowly, and at other times it flows much more rapidly. Its course is affected by topography, geology, climate, by last winter's rainfall, and so on. The same thing for halacha. It's not as easy to say, just follow the text that you see and the text will guide you. Because the question is, what text? Why text? How was this text influenced? If it's a text that was written by human creation, who were those human beings that wrote it down? Those giants. Again, they're giants. But who were they? What made them write this down and not something else? That's our obligation when we approach an halachic text. And he says, thus, the process is a meandering one, and the river's course changes in different times and places. There are even points at which the river's direction changes, and we find it is moving in the opposite direction from that expected. Finally, he says, as the river approaches the sea, it may split into many streams and form a delta. Thus, in order to understand the progress and development of the river in its meanderings, we need to examine the river at each of its geographical and historical stages and see which courses it followed and in which direction it flowed. And on that note, of course.
But of course. I mean, even something like, why did you say Baruch Shem Kibod Malchut Olam Va'ed quietly? Somebody, maybe I'm wrong, I don't know. But the information I was stuck in my head was because this is when people were listening and you know, Malshinim, or people that would travel or, you know, use the problems about, you know, Nazis. But if you wanted to keep it quiet, nobody should know what you're saying and nobody should know what you're doing, it's because somebody might hear, because you're in a very vulnerable, dangerous position. That's it. There's no reason when you read the Siddur why you have to whisper something. This is something that was a reaction to what was going on.
I think everyone would agree with you on that one. I think that the disagreementary would be on the consequence, on the ramification. That, in other words, I'll give you an example from halacha that it's not our debate. It's hundreds of years ago debate. The Gemara says, the Talmud says, a discussion whether someone can kill. How do you say those little bugs in your hair?
Mosquito.
No.
Oh, lice.
Lice. Thank you. If one can kill lice on Shabbos, we know there is a halacha that says you're not allowed to kill animals on Shabbos. It's called latsud, to hunt. You're not allowed to hunt. Now, it's not only to hunt, deers or lions or cows. It's also insects. You're not allowed to take a cup. If there is a fly that's flying in your house, take a cup and just close them inside it. You're not allowed to. Why? Because it's called hunting. All right? And there is an halachic discussion in Masechet Shabbat, in the Shabbos tractate, discusses whether one can kill lice on Shabbos or not. Why? What's the difference? There are halachic opinions in the Talmud, and they were those who were eventually sentenced as halacha, that says that lice are not living creatures. They're not living creatures. I'm talking to you 1,800 years ago. They were back then. Science wasn't a thing. They said they're not living creatures. They're just being developed from your head. There is an entire explanation that we know scientifically is false. Totally false. And because they're not living creatures, you can kill them on Shabbos. That's fine. Because they're not living creatures. That was halacha. And if you open the Shulchan Aruch, you will see it. That's halacha. But science changed, and today we know that lice are a real creature, and they're animals, kind of animals or kind of bugs. What do you do now? On that case, the halacha said for what we just said, it's a make-kill, right? On that case, we said, oh, it's fine to kill lice on Shabbos, or to hunt lice on Shabbos. But now that we know that the assumption, the basic assumption of the Talmud was wrong, what do we do with the entire halacha that we have so far? Do we need to change it to become machmir? Because most of the time our dilemmas is to just become more and more and more mekel. How do we change? How do we ease? How do we approve? How do we change? How do we try to fit ourselves to modern times? But now there is an example of something that if actually we're going to stick with our truth, that we need to fit halacha to modern times, we're going to need to be machmir. Another example, Gary, I'll give in a minute. Another example would be Shabbos. Shabbos, for example, we know that I think that only now in our days we really understand the importance of Shabbos. I think that until electricity and when there was not electricity and life was not as it is today, so busy and 24/7, Shabbos wasn't as something as everyone would appreciate like we appreciate it today. It's like if it was not invented only for our days. Now, someone might say, and we'll see it in a minute, that, let's say, we're not allowed to light up, fire on Shabbos. We know they're not allowed, Mivael. You're not allowed to light up fire on Shabbos. That's a consequence from that is not to use electricity, because there is fire involving the creation of electricity and the electricity itself. What about what we called fluorescent? Though that's a word in English. The fluorescent, for example, which we know it's only gas, that was kind of an electricity inside, it just lights it up. Maybe, or LED. For example, which is not the regular bulb, old bulb that we know that might even light up itself with fire. What about that on Shabbos? Can we use it or not? So on the one hand, we can be makel and say, yes, why not? We can open and close those lamps on Shabbos. Why? Because we're makel, because we said it's not the same thing. It's fire, we can find all the sources. But maybe we need to be machmir with Shabbos values. Do we want electricity in Shabbos? No, those kind of questions are actually modern questions that every and each rabbi faces when it comes to halachic decisions. And what happened from that is that today, when someone asks what the halacha is, let's say he's not a rabbi, but if one of us wants to ask what the halacha is and to figure out, we don't go directly to the Shulchan Aruch and open it. There are new books due to the consequence to those dilemmas of modern times that were written new, amazing halachic books that actually we can see the evolution of halacha in our eyes. I'm holding and I'll pass it over. This is a volume in English from the set of Pnine Halacha, it's called. Pnine Halacha is a set of books, modern halachic books from the past 20 years, still being written, all right? That Rabbi Eliezer Melamed from Har Bracha, he's a rabbi of this the village of Har Bracha in Israel. He wrote down, and a lot of other rabbis, but he was the head of it, he wrote down volumes of something that was never written, I don't know, hundreds of years. He wrote down an entire halacha set of volumes discussing only the things that relate to our everyday life. If there is something that someone would not face during his lifetime, it would not get into it. As opposed, for example, to what the Rambam did, or the Shulchan Aruch, what the Rambam did, for example, that the Rambam said, I'm writing down also the halachot of sacrifices. I'm writing down so a Kohen, a high priest, when he comes into the third temple, he can open my book and he will know what he needs to do and how does he work in the temple. As opposed for that, more like what the Shulchan Aruch said, Rabbi Melamed said, I'm writing down a book, which be the end gate of it will be the end gate of everyone who wants to know what the halacha is. He can just open the book and see what the halacha is. But in order to write down this book, first of all, there are some simple stuff. What is the basic of halacha, the basic of kashrut? But there are some changes today in halacha. And I will show you not only, maybe not in the consequence or in the bottom line, but the questions are different. The questions are different, first of all, because technology has changed. And I will see, we'll see in a minute, we'll see an example of the 3 weeks that we have between Rosh Chodesh Av and, between Nisan B'Tammuz and Rosh Chodesh Av, that we know we're not allowed to be happy on those 3 weeks because we are being set for the destruction of the temple and towards towards Tisha B'Av, the fast day. Now, we know that the halacha says, and we know that the early halacha, 300 years ago, for example, said, already the rabbis back then said, you're not allowed to listen to music, to instruments on those 3 weeks. But what happens today? I mean, music today is not what music was 300 years ago. If you would like to listen to music 300 years ago, you would need to go on an event, on a concert. You know, you need to be dressed well. You need to pay the best of your money in order to come in. You will listen to, to this opera or something for 2 hours. It's going to be the entire evening. I'm going to be dedicated for music, and then you're going to come back home, which is makes sense that, you're not going to go to wedding. And you're not going to go to hear music as well. But today, you just get into your car. You don't even start your car. And the radio is already on. And there's music. I'm not even talking about music in the radio. I'm talking also music in commercials. For example, just open TV. There is an opening to a TV series. And it has music inside. All right? Not talking about that sometimes we hear music. We don't even understand we hear music. We're just it's just coming from one ear and goes for the other. It wasn't the situation 300 years ago. So what are we doing today about music? Should we change this halacha and say, wait, maybe music is not something that makes someone happy anymore? But on the other hand, we know that music is still something special. Music is still something that can change someone's mood. If you are upset and you hear music, sometimes it can cheer you up. We know that. Music has power. So what do we do with that? Do we say, wait, maybe, I don't know, maybe rabbis never said don't read a book on the 3 weeks. Maybe listen to music today, it's like reading a book. It's the same thing that you do in your spare time, and that's fine. It's not giving you this kind of, joy that you will forget about the sadness of the destruction of the temple. Or maybe on the one hand, maybe it is. Let's dive into it and we'll see. That's another example of a modern book of halacha. Again, in the past 20 years, that when I, for example, I have an halachic questions and I don't know, I will just go and see what he says because this is my end gate of halacha today. And his impact is amazing. This is in English. If you can just pass it over, you can look inside. Those of you who doesn't see it, just look, please. Listening to music on personal electronic devices on the 3 weeks. And he says, some authorities maintain that just as one may not listen to live music during the 3 weeks, so too one may not listen to recorded music played on home electronic devices during this period. For example, one may listen only to songs without instrumental accompaniment during the Omer period. We know that there is another period during the year that we're not allowed to listen to music, which is Omer period, and the 3 weeks. This is how some of the greatest poskim, look how he writes down halacha. First of all, he explains what the difficulty is, what is the dilemma, and then right away he goes backward in time. Look what the greatest poskim, the rabbis rule, Igot Moshe, which is Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, Yechavedat, some poskim that live 100 years before this rabbi. He first of all starts with them and see what the latest rabbis before me said. And then if he wants to change, he will go all the way backwards on the river, all the way upstream, until he gets to the source of the water. Some poskim even forbid listening to non-instrumental, what we call a cappella music, during this period, Tzitzeliezer and more. However, some permit listening to music on electronic devices, reasoning that the Achronim, again, Achronim are the last rabbis after the Rishonim, until the Holocaust, as the Achronim only prohibited listening to live musical performances, which entails some degree of festivity, because that's what they had. They did not tell, don't listen to radio, because they did not have the radio back then. They said, don't listen to TV, because they didn't have TV. They did not have Apple Music or Spotify. They just said, don't go to festival or concert, because this is where you'll find music, or weddings, because this is where you find music. And he continues and says, listening to music through electronic devices, on the other hand, is not particularly festive. Now, this is a rabbi who's not the most liberal, but just as an example of how a rabbi approaches an halachic dilemma today. There is a dilemma. First of all, we don't say only no. By the same way, we don't say only yes. Not right away. Wait, what is the dilemma? What is the complicated, why is it complex? Granted, he says, when phonographs, radios, and tape recorders were first introduced, people truly experienced joy when using them to listen to music. Because we know rabbis that said at the beginning, when a radio first, it's not that we first, in our generation, we were the first people to ask, wait, what do you do with this on the Omer on the 3 weeks? No, when the radio was invented, rabbis back then said, oh, what do we do? No, not allowed. Why? Because people were so happy to listen to the radio that everyone wanted to buy a radio, a TV, it was such an amazing thing. We said, no, of course not. Of course you're not going to do it. Today, however, he says, when everyone listens to music on electronic devices all the time, people do not experience so much joy in doing so. Thus, it is not prohibited to listen to them during the 3 weeks. Want to continue or want to stop here? That's a good conclusion. No? So far, so good. Gary, what do you think? What?
They're smarter than we are today, but that's not necessarily true. They set a foundation, and there's probably as...
I didn't say smarter. I say giants. That's different. That's a different. Yeah.
Giants as this...
No, they were just giants.
Okay, but there's a basic, because everything is evolves. It changes,
but again, in order for us to be counted as someone who can change, in order for us to change halacha, we must stay within the fences of halachic observance. We need to agree. I'm not going to go to one people on the street and ask him, what do you think the halacha should be? Oh, you said that's going to be the halacha. There are some rules that we need to follow.
But 2,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago, nobody would agree about
the right. No, but they were worried about walking your donkey on Shabbos and walking with your donkey to shul or riding your donkey to shul. They were worried. Now, let's see what they say about riding a donkey to shul, because we know riding a donkey was a transportation back there. Let's see what they're going to say today about driving your car. What they're going to say, it's the same thing. Putting aside electricity, you know what? Let's say that there is no electricity using the car, there is nothing, that's fine. What about just using a tool to go to shul and moving between different authorities? We know on Shabbos, for example, yeah?
Bicycle.
What about bicycle? Swim? I don't know. Skate to Shabbos. There is an halachic question. Can you skate on Shabbos or not? There's an halachic question. Can you skate on Shabbos or not? Now, after all the different aspects, the different dilemmas about whether you can go on ice, for example, because you cut the ice and there's a problem on being mechatech, on cutting on the ice. There is a problem of memachek, which means that if you have, let's say, the ice is not 100%, straight, then you can make it more straight. That's a problem on Shabbos. Let's put everything aside. Do we want our Shabbos to look like everyone's skating to shul? Maybe Michael would like to. You'll walk way faster if you skate from your home to shul. But do we want our Shabbos to be people skating outside shul when there is davening? Because children will skate outside and not come into shul. And people would, I mean, it's more than just asking what the halacha, the nuance of halacha is. Or the nuances are. It's more than that.
So in English you say the spirit of the law as opposed to
the spirit of the law. So there is a spirit of halacha. There is a term called ruach halacha, or what my rabbis called meta halacha. the mita halacha, those arguments that are above the halacha, they're actually not mita, they're actually part of the halacha. The halacha itself that evolves and brings its own rules, because the halacha determines what are the rules in order to change itself. One of the rules are mita halacha. We need to understand, and this is actually the book of Rabbi Sperber, where he gives what is called kvod ha-briot, the dignity of the briot, the creation. Then we say that when there's kvod ha-briot against kvod ha-tzibur, when there is one dignity against the tzibur dignity, because the reason a woman doesn't have a liot is because the Gemara in Masechet Megillah say that women are not, it's not for the honoring of the men of the shul that the woman will take an aliyah and not them. So that's his starting point of the halacha. And he says that today, if you want to honor one person, it's bigger than honoring the entire public. The public, there's a lot of stuff. This is meta halacha. This is meta halacha. But again, it's a meta halacha, but it's still part of the halacha itself. We need to understand that. But I just want to continue furthermore, because we need to move through the last part of this year. Furthermore, a distinction can be made between happy songs and regular songs, right? Why not? It is only fitting to prohibit happy songs during the 3 weeks, whereas regular tunes and certainly sad ones should not be prohibited. We have sad songs. We have sad songs, so people can cry when they listen to music. That's good. That's what we want them to do. We want them to be upset. Why not letting them? Similarly, he says, the 3 weeks versus regular tunes and certainly sad ones should not be prohibited. Similarly, the Gemara in Masechet Shabbos teaches that the custom was to play flutes at the funeral in order to arouse people to cry out in anguish over the deceased. Look, he gave a source into his halacha psak that is not part of the halachic discussion of what you can do or not do in the 3 weeks, but that strengthened him. And where did he bring it from? Not from his child or his rabbi. He brought it from the Talmud. Because we go all the way back in order to strengthen. The more, the ancient you bring your source, the stronger it is for your psak. And he says, in order to arouse people to cry out in anguish over the deceased. And this was part of the mitzvah of accompanying the deceased to his final resting place, what we call levayat hamet. This shows that there is no sweeping prohibition against hearing instrumental music. Rather, one may not listen to happy tunes during times of mourning. I heard from my father and teacher, Mori Verabi, his father, that not only may one play sad instrumental songs related to the destruction of the temple on the radio during the 9 days. Now we're talking about the 9 days, which are more strict than the 3 weeks. But it is actually good to do so because it inspires people to mourn the destruction even more. This is a rabbi who's not as liberal as we think. He's not liberal at all, actually. And he says, wait, today we look at music differently than how we looked at it hundreds of years ago. Today we can use music to what? To emphasize our mourning and grief on the destruction of the temple. Why not? If we can use it to our hand for our good, let's do it. Why not? And this is an example. And there is, I give on my page many examples. Just to say, not to get into them. For example, microphone on Shabbos. There is an halachic orthodox microphone on Shabbos called microphone shel machon tzomet, for example, in Israel. Not everyone agrees. Again, everything, even this, many people oppose. I'm just giving you the left or side that we can see that things changes. Although Rabbi Melamed is very, very much in the mainstream in Israel. For example, we said the microphone on Shabbos. We have something called microwave, for example. We know that you're not allowed to, bake a meatloaf and right afterwards put the lasagna into your oven, right? You're not allowed to do so because your oven is fleshing. What about the microwave? Can I just heat a bowl of meatballs and just put in, a cream or something? So that's a new thing. It's not an oven that we have back then. And there is halachic opinions. Like Rabbi Rabinovich Zecher Tzadik Livracha was Rosh Yeshiva at Maale Edomim, and he was the rabbi of Clanton Park in the 70s. And he wrote down in his book, and he said in his book, Shuk Nachum, and he, again, wasn't a huge liberal. And he writes down that, and he was a doctor for physics. And he saw, and he opened the microwave, and he learned all the technology, and he got to the conclusion that the microwave is different than the oven, because the things that you heat inside the microwave are not getting into the side of the microwave. In other words, what the problem is in the oven is when you put meat inside the oven and it's very warm, the oven itself becomes fleshy because the thing you put right afterwards will get the things that are inside the oven right now, the taste and the smell and the humid that is fleshy. In microwave, you don't have this problem. So again, a new thing popped up in the world and now it's easier for us. COVID vaccination. Is COVID vaccination in general, is that halakhically? Do we halakhically need to get vaccinated due to COVID? Yes or no? Do we need halakhically to get vaccinated? Yes or no? That's a new question. Just rise up now. Can you say for everyone, you must go halakhically to get vaccinated? There are some rabbis who said yes. The awesome rabbis, Haredi rabbis in Israel, who said yes, for their people to get go vaccinated. They said, you must, this is a halakha, you must go and get vaccinated in that case. Some say no. That's a new question. Again, it's not the newest question, because there was already questions about the first vaccination, which was for the black disease, I'm saying, about back then in the 1700s. But what do you do today with COVID? Another three thing would be the card at hotels on Shabbos. When you put, you need to open your door with a card on Shabbos. What one does when he goes in a hotel. So in Israel, all hotels will have keys, manual keys. But not everywhere here is going to have manual keys anymore. Everyone are using those RNFC cards, the magnetic cards, in order to get into their hotel rooms. If one goes to sleep in a hotel on Shabbos, does he need to stay in his room the entire Shabbos and not go out? What does he do about that? So there are halachic discussions, and there are heterim for that too. Again, everything is orthodox here. There are heterim for that from the most mainstream rabbis that open up the discussion about electricity, and they try to understand, because that's a new thing. This RNFC technology about magnetic stuff, and how do you put it inside? It's so complicated. But so first of all, the rabbi needs to understand the physics behind it, see what happens behind the scenes, and then after you understand the technology, you can go and approach the halakhic discussion and now start to understand what the halakha exactly is. And it's masses of pages to just be hater on that thing. I just saw the latest thing that I saw is, and I know it's going to change everyone's life, is the umbrella on Shabbos. There is a new technology, Baruch Hashem, Shechayanu v'Kiimanu, approved by the chief rabbi of Israel, the Orthodox chief rabbi of Israel, yeah, the Rabbi David Lau, who said this gadget is fine on Shabbos in order to carry an umbrella on Shabbos. Michael is not going to get soaked anymore when you walk around when it's pouring rain outside. It's a little cup that you put on the, that says, and it's not that, complicated, but it's just this kind of plastic that you put on your umbrella that says an umbrella of Shabbos, and you cannot close or open it, and that got the approval of the Chief Rabbinate of Israel, and everyone can start walking with their umbrellas on Shabbos. Good luck with it. You can order that online. Again, those kind of things are new, and kind of new, in order to understand what Shabbos is.
It's got to be in the
roof. Exactly. It has to be in the roof. Of course, only in the roof. But that's fine. When you're walking bathrooms, you're good. That's fine. So that was just to show. Yeah, Barry. Maritain, exactly. In halacha, that's called maritain, which means even if there's something fine that I can do, I sit in a restaurant where I know everything is kosher, but there's no kashrut on it. Or for example, I'm sitting in a restaurant, not eating, sitting with my Christian friend. I'm not eating everything, but someone might walk through the window and see me sitting inside and say, "Oh, Rabbi Rakovsky is sitting inside this restaurant." So of course I can sit there as well. That happens all the time. I agree with you. That is a very important. Very important. Yeah. What?
With a
keep on.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can recognize me even without a keep on, maybe. I don't know. But on my first week here, Priyal and I went to Savers to shopping. I didn't know there's no fridge that's cheaper, but we went to Savers to get milk and bread. And and someone, we were 2 days in town, and someone approached us and said, "Oh, you're the new Shlechim here." Now he's not part of Shari Tfil. "You're the new Shlechim here. We saw your video." It was spread around and said, "Okay, the people recognize me." The second they hear, we need to be very, very, very cautious in what you do, what you don't do, what people see and what not, because it's very important. And this isn't halach, again, that's one may say this is a meta halachic value. But no, this is halacha itself. Halacha, even if everything is fine, there is marit ayin. So in that case, marit ayin is what the best thing about, the biggest, I would say, thing in the umbrella is that. But after we saw that and we saw the complexity of halacha of modern questions, that we'd not talk about fertility questions, for example, everything that goes on there. This is very, very interesting stuff. And then I wrote down the page, but we don't have time. I do want to try and explain why I think this series was very, very important and why I think halacha should be important. I'm not talking about observing halacha. I'm not suggesting to be more observant, to be less observant. That's not my point. My point is why the concept of halacha is important. When we live in a free world, we think that freedom is, what is freedom? To do whatever I want, whenever I want, whatever I want, just Right? That's freedom. I mean, you're Canadian, you're not American, so that's fine. But being in real freedom would mean I don't want any external power or force to decide for me what to do and what not to do. Right? We know that sometimes we'll never be able to be 100% free because there are some laws that we need to obey. We need to stop a car on a red light and continue driving when it's becoming green. If you want to drive on a red light, good luck with that. Maybe you're a free person, but you're going to end up under the ground. No problem. But there are some rules that we need to obey in order to, you know, live our life. But in general, people want to be free. We want freedom. Freedom means to do whatever we want, however we want. That's not Jewish freedom. Jewish freedom, and we're going to celebrate Pesach, and we're reading now, this Shabbos is Shirat Hayam in Beshalach. We know that we moved from being under the ruler of Egypt, to become under the king of Egypt, under Pharaoh, we moved to become under the king of the world. Am Yisrael not just went out of Egypt and they said, we're free. Our freedom is amazing. Cherut, Chag HaCherut is Pesach. We're so free, we can do whatever we want. They moved all the way from Egypt to get the Torah. That's what they did. There was not even one day of not being real free like we say in modern world today. So freedom in Judaism is very complex. It's a different thing. We will discuss it towards Pesach Bezrat Hashem. We're going to talk about freedom a lot. What is the Jewish freedom? But I don't want to talk, and there are a lot of rabbis who say, you know, halacha, halacha is a real freedom because they can choose what actually rules you want to have on yourself. I don't want to go in that direction. I want to talk in a different semantic. I think, and that's something that I learned from my wife, Priel, and that's good that you're here today, thank you. And actually, I learned it when I first met her and I first fell in love with her, is that sometimes, not sometimes, but the belief in God is the closest thing for faith in God would be loving someone. Why? Loving someone. Because loving is here, it's not here. Yeah, it's here, yeah, you have chemicals, yeah, you know why, you know. But if I want to explain to Terry, for example, why do I love Priel? I can tell you, because she's the most amazing person I know, because she's the best, because she does everything for me, because I feel that I'm full with her, because she's amazing. So I can tell you. You can might understand me, but usually the average person would never be able to feel what I feel. I would never be able to transfer feelings or senses to others. I can just explain why I feel what I feel. I hope that they will get it. I hope that in their brain they will understand what I'm trying to say. That's the best I can do. Same thing is in believing with God. Why? I will never be able. And maybe we'll do a mini-series on philosophy, and just philosophy. But I will never be able to prove to someone that God exists. I will never be able to do it. Doesn't matter how hard I try. And bigger and better than me tried to and failed. You will never be able to prove to someone and also to yourself that God exists. Never. That's not a thing you can do. Why not? Same as love. You just know it. You just feel it. You know this is real. I know I love Priel. I have no doubt in it. Can I objectively prove it right now with this mathematical equation on the whiteboard and let everyone know the same thing? No. Never. Although I know for 100% true that I love her. I will never be able to put it as an objective. Same thing with believing in God. I will never be able to prove objectively to someone that I believe in God because it's here. It's not here. It's not knowledge. It's feelings. And it's faith. And it's 100% true. And no doubt. No doubt. But it's still subjective. And just as when you love a person, it doesn't matter if you love your children or you love your husband or your wife or your parents, you don't want the love to stay in an amorphic level. You want to take the love and to put it back to ground. You want to make it practical. In other words, when I really felt that I love Priel, I proposed because I want to live my life with her. I want to wake up in the morning next to her. I want to cook with her. I want to raise a family with her. I want to have children with her. I want everything because I want to take the love that I feel towards this entity, towards this soul, and I want to make it practical. Pragmatical. I want to have it something that I can feel, I can use, I can talk to, I can do. Just loving a person and not expressing it towards something is useless. You can love someone, but if it's not coming into an expression, it doesn't worth anything. You just feel it, but it's even very, very hard. Just as I try and all of us try to take our love towards our children or spouses or whoever it is and try to give it an expression, halacha, folks, is the expression of the love between man and God. halacha, these rules that every day I wake up, I put tefillin on myself. Why do I do it? It's very difficult. But why do I wash the dishes on Motzi Shabbos when I'm so exhausted? And I still do it because I want to make her happy. Because I want, even though I know, she doesn't know I'm washing the dishes. Even though then I'm going to wash my dishes at home, because I know this is what you would have wanted me to do now, and that will make her happy. And everything that I want to do is because I love her, and I want to make it into expression. I would put tefillin in the morning because I love Kadosh Baruch Hu, because I love God. And this is the way, when I wake up in the morning, I will do it, not because I'm getting a sachar or I will be entitled to heaven after Me'avesrim 120. No. I'm doing it because I want to have an expression of my love towards God and His love towards me, because it flows in both directions, I hope. It flows in both directions. I want to take this expression, I want to take this love and put it in expression in my daily life. And what's the best, how is the best thing to do it? Is halacha. It's about observing Shabbos and about singing your Kiddush and making la seder. And trying to observe the little things, in the little, right? You see, love is in the little things, right? Don't bring her this huge diamond and you'll say how much you love her. The small things that you do during life, this is, right? I'm newlywed. You can tell me, all of you that were married for a lot of years, you can tell me that this is, right? This is, eventually it's in the small things. From time to time, we need to bring a huge diamond. But usually it's in the small things. Same thing is in halacha. The smaller, the more nuanced the halacha is, the more it gives the expression of how much you love God. Because it's very cool, very nice, once in a while to go to Daven, or once in a while to celebrate the Chag, a festival, and once in a while. But the moment you love someone, you want this expression on a daily basis, in the little things, in the little stuff, every and each day. Halacha is the best system to do so, for two reasons. First of all, it's beautiful. Halacha is beautiful. It gives meaning to your love towards God and it brings meaning to your life. Because the moment you know something, you care for something, and you give it the expression and you do it because you want to do it, your life are filled with the fact that you know you fulfill this love toward and this faith toward the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And second of all, it's beautiful because most of it is man-created. And it's weakened. It's weakness because it's not everything divine and not just God told us everything that is written in the Shulchan Aruch. But because it's handmade, because it's not, it's artificial, it makes it so beautiful. Because you know the people who wrote it before you, they loved God, not less than you love it. And you know you're following the same path as the generation before you. You're being something, a small piece of a bigger picture. And just like I want to take this halacha and express my love toward the Kadosh Baruch Hu, so did my father and his father and his rabbi and his rabbi cousin, the cousin of the rabbi, and the one in Australia and the one in Israel and the one in Russia and the one in North Africa. Even though there might be nuances different, that he will daven this Seder, he will daven his Ashkenazi, his Sephardi, he will go with Rabbi Yosef Karo, he will go with Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. Eventually, they're all focusing on the same target, on the same goal. And this is to take this love towards the Kadosh Baruch Hu, give it an expression in the everyday world. And this is my bracha, the Bezrat Hashem. I hope that we could taste a little bit of this beauty of halacha and the importance of halacha in our everyday Jewish life in this mini-series. And I thank you very much for those who are here, for those who haven't been here, for those who hear the recordings throughout the series. Thank you very much for coming. I really, really enjoyed it. And I'm here. Sorry that we don't have the 5 minutes for questioning, but I'm going to be here. So if you want to ask any questions, I'm here. Yes, Gary, thank you very much. Well, again.
The lights.
You're talking about, no, you're talking about closing a circle of electricity. It's not that simple. It's not that simple today. You can have a Shabbos timer, of course.
Okay. And you can time it to go on and off, and it's considered
Shabbos elevator.
So here's the other thing I asked somebody, because the warmer, you can also put it on a timer
right
on phone and have it go on and off. Is that
halakhic approved, of course. Definitely.
So some say no, some say yes.
No, so yeah, again. It's so many opinions, different opinions. I'll talk mainstream in my world. I represent myself.
This wasn't even thought of, forget hundreds of years ago, this wasn't even thought of 30 years ago. So there's so many things that are...
But you're going to the easy questions, Gary. I think you're going to the easy questions, because asking if you want to eat a heated food, if there is an halakhic opportunity, I think owning Shabbos and having the dignity of Shabbos and enjoying the Shabbos with, when you eat cold food, it's not for the respect of Shabbos. So if you have this halakhic way, I think it's going to be easier. Right. No, dangerous is a different thing. Dangerous, we know that sakana is different. That's also in halachic reading. When we, in halachic question, when we need to figure out if something to do or not to do, dangerous, the health of the person of acting is the number one priority. Pikuach nefesh doche Shabbat. We know that. Of course, we're always in the stream. We're always in the river. But again, there are different. That's what Rabbi Sperber we read. He said, "This stream is not one stream or one river that flows the same directions. It's very complicated. You choose where, what path you want to go. It all comes from the same source. We're all sons of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We all want for the good. But what exactly is the path you're going through on the water? Which stream you're choosing? It's very complicated." And all the way, it's just expanding more and more and more and more. It will never get to be one. Never. Again, this is Torah Shebe'al Peh. We talked about it. This is Oral Torah. Also with the introduction to Talmud. That was our first class in introduction to Talmud. What is the Oral Torah? We said that the Oral Torah is a Torah that can never be written down. Never. Why can't it be written down? Because this is its beauty. And the moment Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi said, "Et la'asot la'Hashem eferu Torah," people are they don't know what the halacha is anymore. We need to write down the Oral Torah to the Mishnah. The moment he did so, he didn't just write down what the halacha, bullets of halacha. He wrote down all the different opinions in every and each question, because he wanted to preserve the beauty of Oral Torah, which is discussion. It's always re-evolving itself, all the time. All the time it's changing. The Talmud is the best, we talked about that, we had the mini-series. The Talmud is the best expression of that, because the Talmud is discussions. The Talmud is halacha throughout talking between people. Which is, this is the Oral Torah. It's oral. So yes, it's very, very complicated, the stream. But we need to know which stream we choose eventually, and we need to follow it, to stick with it. Let's say it like that. Yes, Terry?
I wanted to say that in my understanding of how we live, and it's at the end of the day, certain things are more trying than others, but at the end of the day, it's how you live, how you can be the best person, how you can be the best neighbor, how you can be the best Kiddush Hashem, how you can be the best to your potential in one thing.